Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Jonathan Schanzer, Vice President, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, to help me logically recount what the headlines from Jerusalem and from Tel Aviv say about the conflict in Gaza, in the north, against Hezbollah in Lebanon, and especially in the Israeli cabinet these last hours and days since the proposal by the President of the United States for a ceasefire hostage deal in some fashion. Jonathan, a very good day to you. Thank you for helping me. Just a few headlines to illustrate the confusion. Haredi Party Shas says it fully supports Israel's Gaza hostage deal proposal. And then a nightmare, that's in quotes, North cries out for action amid widespread fires sparked by Hezbollah. And then the deal for hostages now must include information from the Jerusalem Post that at least a third of the hostages are dead. And the subhead says some recovered hostage bodies show signs of execution. All of this adds up to many directions for the Israeli cabinet. Chiefly, I want to start with, what is the present understanding of the offer by the President of the United States of the negotiation in Cairo and the cabinet in Jerusalem? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. A lot of mixed messages right now coming out of the Israeli government. I'm still, quite frankly, not sure whether this was pre-approved by the Israeli government before it was announced by the president. I'm actually still not even sure whether the Israelis have embraced this or not. I do know that the White House has touted this as some sort of brilliant, amorphous document that could be interpreted by either side as a potential victory. If you know your history, then, you know, I think this is sort of a reference to Resolution 242 issued after the 1967 war, where all sides could look at the verbiage and potentially say that they got what they wanted out of the proposal. I don't think that's what's going on here. I think the Israelis are actually entertaining right now a deal whereby Hamas would very likely be able to survive at the end of a temporary ceasefire that I think would become more permanent. I think the less that Israel fights, the less likely it will be that we will see a return to fighting. From my vantage point, it looks as if the United States is trying to slowly snuff out Israel's war. And if the Israelis do buy into this, then I think that likely means the end of the war in Gaza. By all accounts, they've destroyed the vast majority of the Hamas fighters, and they've certainly conquered the vast majority of the infrastructure that Hamas has wielded in Gaza. But that is not the war aim that they declared. And I think the Israelis are now in a test of wills with the United States to some extent about how this thing ends.
The two pieces here, the north and the south, will begin in the south, Rafah. My understanding from conversations with Seth Frantzman of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, your worthy organization, is that the frustration includes the question of the Philadelphia route. Many tunnels have been identified so far. More are anticipated. This is something you brought to this audience's attention weeks ago, Jonathan. It involves Egypt. It involves the fantastic idea that Egypt was unaware of these tunnels under the Philadelphia route. And now the foreign minister of Egypt, Mr. Shoukry, demands that the Philadelphia route, which is not Egypt, it's inside the Gaza border, be returned to Egypt. And that means no solution for the tunnels that, if I understand correctly, Cairo denies knowing anything about. Can you help me with this, Jonathan?
That's exactly what's going on. You've just described it perfectly. The Egyptians know that they've been caught with their pants down, that they have now been exposed. Although the Israelis are not screaming it from the rooftops, it's now public that there are 50 or 70 different tunnels that exist between the Philadelphia corridor and that area between the Sinai Peninsula and Gaza, that the Egyptians have are now understood to have been allowing these tunnels to operate, perhaps even operating themselves in exchange for what appears to be money or some remuneration or perhaps an agreement by Hamas or by Iran to not destabilize Egypt. I think at some point one day we'll learn about the terms of how exactly these tunnels were created and sustained. But the Egyptians right now are seemingly apoplectic about the Israeli operations along their border. They're claiming that the Israelis will flood Egypt with refugees. Of course, we know now that the Israelis have evacuated the vast majority of displaced persons from Rafah. I think the fears that are being expressed by Foreign Minister Shoukry are way overblown, but one does get a sense that they are desperate in Egypt to prevent this from turning into something worse, to prevent this from turning into a crisis. It would mean very likely a drastic reduction in American aid. It would be an embarrassment for the regime itself, and perhaps even an unraveling of the Egyptian regime if things got bad enough. So you can understand why they're in panic mode, but you can also understand why the Israelis are still dead set on exposing and destroying these tunnels, because that is the lifeline for Hamas in the Gaza Strip.
The tunnels. In 2004, I traveled to Gaza and was taken into the Philadelphia route by the Golani Brigade to the fortresses that were built along the front facing Egypt. The Golani Brigade was in charge of the Philadelphia route, and at the time, the farmers, the Israeli farmers, were being guarded from a provocation and infiltration by the Palestinian terrorists. This is before Hamas took over the whole of the Gaza Strip, and there still was an Israeli settlement there. There was no difficulty for Egypt at the time that Israel was providing security. Do we believe the tunnels were built after 2005, 2006, after Hamas took over Gaza, so that we're not talking about infinite amount of time? We're talking about something that is entirely identified with Egyptian governments from 2005 onwards. Do we know, Jonathan?
The timeline's fuzzy, John. I mean, I remember right around the time that you visited, I remember talking to some very senior Israeli officials who were talking to us about the tunnels. And they were explaining that when the Israelis were destroying those tunnels, where they would put explosives on the Gaza side once they discovered them, that they would see plumes of smoke and dust coming out on the other side in Sinai, often by Egyptian military guard posts. So in other words, the implication was that the Mubarak regime was somehow involved in this in some way. But then what we had was the revolution and then the counter-revolution in Egypt, where you saw the rise to power from the Muslim Brotherhood. And from that year, that 2011-2012 year, they were very openly aiding Hamas. I was actually told by someone, a senior Israeli official, that, you know, Egypt had become the back office for Hamas. But when Abdel Fattah al-Sisi came in, our understanding was that from roughly 2014 to 2018, that they were destroying all of those tunnels. Something happened, as I understand it, right around 2018, where the Sisi regime went back on its previous policy, on its previous decision. What prompted them to begin to allow these tunnels to be forged and to continue to operate? That's the question that I think we're all wrestling with and that needs to come to light.
To the north, to the fires, there are spectacular photographs from Jerusalem. Opposition lawmakers pan weak government as fires burn for over a day across swaths of territory, writes the Times of Israel. Far-right ministers say Lebanon should burn and be sent back to the Stone Age. And then there are various reports of Hezbollah rockets, of Hezbollah operative being killed by the IDF strike, of a Syrian saying several killed in alleged Israeli airstrike in Aleppo. Is the North different than it was when we last spoke a week ago? Has something happened that Hezbollah has decided to unleash the fire weapon?
I think the Israelis were very carefully considering their options as it relates to Hamas, looking to, you know, perhaps administer that death knell. And what you're now seeing, I think, is Hezbollah trying to show the Israelis that there is a high cost for doing so. They are trying to distract them from that final step or steps that they need to take in Rafah. And so what they have done is they have unleashed hell in the north. There's something to the order of 2,400 acres of territory in the north that are burning right now, massive fires, making the place uninhabitable. This is obviously unacceptable to the Israeli public, and you're now beginning to see an outcry on the part of the Israeli people, openly criticizing their government, openly decrying the paralysis that they see from the Israeli government. I can't remember a time where I saw Israeli guests on television on both the left and the right just begging for action to be taken by their government. This runs counter to the very ethos of the Jewish state, and people are generally confused about where the next steps will lead.
The army is sitting in the north waiting for orders, if I understand correctly. The way it was described to me is they're in their trenches. They've been training for weeks. They've been training because they're a mobile organization. They want to attack. They want to move. Sitting there taking incoming anti-tank missiles is not an army. That is what you'd have to say right now, an encampment. So therefore, is that what the cabinet is not providing vision for the what? We're talking about a large contingent of divisions in the north.
There's a massive amount of manpower deployed in the north right now, John, and they have been sitting. I've had conversations with folks from the Israeli military who've been sitting up there, and actually they complain that not only are they just sitting there immobile, but it's ironically they're getting so much support from the Israeli public that they're having food brought to them, right? Hamburgers and sweets and cakes and things like that. And actually what we're hearing is that the soldiers are getting fat, that they're literally sitting there eating, doing nothing, and they are growing more and more frustrated. And I do think that this all tracks back to that same paralysis that we're talking about. The Israelis have been ground down in Gaza, not by Hamas, but by American policy, by lawfare being waged at the ICC and the ICJ, by political pressure being brought by the UN and by the EU. So they've really ground almost to a halt in Gaza, and they are frozen in the north, and the frustration continues to grow.
And the attacks by Hezbollah, you watch them very carefully at FTD. Are they more intense, less intense, more rockets, less? Can we see a pattern? The fires they used in the Negev, they, remember when they used to launch those balloons that would set the fields afire? That's not a new weapon. It is new for Hezbollah. Can we tell? Has Hezbollah increased its tempo of attacking?
I think what Hezbollah is doing is it's cementing a sort of victory that it has achieved until now, which is to vacate 100,000 people from the north of Israel and to generally make the place uninhabitable. What they're doing is they're cementing that by also burning the place and making the agriculture less viable, making the prospect of return seem less likely. This is demoralizing for the residents of the north. It's demoralizing for Israel. And this is what you can now see being expressed rather openly in the Israeli media, the frustration and the bewilderment that the Israeli public feels as they watch this unfold.
Jonathan Shanzer is the Foundation of Defense of Democracies Vice President. We're going to turn to an invitation to the Prime Minister of Israel to come to the United States and address Congress and meet with dignitaries about the crisis in Gaza, in the north, in Lebanon, and throughout the Middle East because of Iran. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. but don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.